Good morning. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM 89.9. I'm Hannah Colton. Many New Mexicans don't make enough money to comfortably pay rent or a mortgage, even while working a full-time job. Local agencies that manage housing assistance depend on uncertain federal funding, and there aren't many incentives for the private sector to pick up the slack. What's the housing situation for middle to low income people in New Mexico? What should be done to address a lack of affordable housing? We want to hear from you this morning. Call 277-5866. Or if you're outside of the Albuquerque metro area, it's 1-877-899-5866. You can also email us at letstalk@kunm.org. I'd like to welcome in the studio right now Renya Ehrenfeucht, Department Chair and Professor of Community and Regional Planning at UNM, also on the Executive Committee of the Albuquerque Affordable Housing Coalition. Good morning, Renya.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. And Andrew Astoshin, Deputy Director of the Albuquerque Housing Authority.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Thanks for being here. Also by phone, we have Joseph Montoya, Executive Director for the Santa Fe County Housing Authority. Good morning, Joseph.
Good morning to you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Joseph. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good.
So first, how does the government define affordable housing? So what does that mean to our various government agencies?
Well, for us at the Housing Authority, we place a great focus on people who are at or below 50% of the area median income. And when it comes to affordability, we're really taking into consideration people who are rent burdened. The general measurement is that a healthy rent payment should be about 30% of your income. And people who are rent burdened pay upwards of 40 or 50% of their housing, of their income towards rent. And obviously, when you pay that much rent, it really limits you in what you can spend in other important areas.
And I mean, this is a more subjective question, but do you think that 30% of being rent burdened, is that a realistic measure of affordability for many people in New Mexico?
Well, according to our statistics and our latest annual report at the Albuquerque Housing Authority, our whole households earn about $12,000 to as little as $9,000 a year. And so when you're paying 30% of such a low number, it places a lot of stress on the household. So even households who are paying that 30% when their income is so limited and they have very little choices in living throughout our city.
Renee, yeah.
And if I could just add a couple things, I think Andrew's last point is a really critical one, that paying 30% if you're only bringing in $1,000 a month is very different than paying 30% if you're bringing in $4,000 a month. And so kind of keeping in mind on just really how stressed lower-income households are to just meet basic needs. But the other, that there's some people who are advocating that we should start incorporating transportation costs into understanding housing costs. Because one thing that people have done in seeking affordable housing is moving to areas that are more affordable, you know, in terms of cost of housing, but that may increase transportation costs. And there's a housing transportation index that suggests overall we shouldn't be paying more than 45% of our income and in
housing and transportation.
Mm-hmm. And in New Mexico right now, their analysis shows that on average, we're paying 51%.
Wow. And Joseph, that's a really big factor in a lot of affordable communities in the Santa Fe area, right? That transportation.
Absolutely. So just to be able to add to the original conversation,
yeah.
The issue in terms of low-income people, as was said, is extremely, extremely dire simply because over 50% of the people in New Mexico are paying over 50% of their income towards housing. So as was related, you can't pay for your health costs, food costs, things of that nature. It becomes a very significant issue for those at the lowest income level. We have, in that way, we have a lot of people that are over cost burdens. So I think it's over 45% of the people are paying more than 30% of their household income towards housing. And so what's happened, of course, is that people will drive to Rio Rancho or to Las Vegas or to Española and surrounding areas just to be able to work in Santa Fe, but not house in Santa Fe. That creates a big problem for, you know, our tax base and people creating a sense of community here. If they're stuck in one place driving and into another place where they're living.
That's a good point. It's not only an effect on individual budgets, but also on the community as a whole. If you are spending more than a third of your income on housing, do you have enough in your budget for other necessities? What gets cut first if your housing costs go up? Give us a call this morning, 277-5866, or if you're outside of Albuquerque, 1-877-899-5866. So let's go to, you know, the current situation. So if I can't afford to pay market rent, if I'm over rent burdened, what are my options to try to get housing assistance?
There are basically two types of units within affordable housing programs. They're rent restricted, which these affordable housing programs have a reduced rent by virtue of the program they participate in. The other one is what we call subsidized housing. And that targets people at or below 50% of the area median income. And at the Housing Authority, the majority of the people we serve are below 30%. And subsidized housing, for the most part, means that you pay 30% of your income according to HUD regulations, and that a housing subsidy picks up the rest. So that is absolutely key for the extremely low-income households that you heard Joseph describe, because subsidized housing is their only choice. And subsidized housing is what is constantly in flux and crisis with federal funding. And there's, in many ways, at the Housing Authority, we have 10 times as many people who need housing vouchers as we are able to offer them.
10 times as many.
That is true.
Wow. And so, I mean, does that reflect a wait list? Well, Albuquerque has moved away from wait lists.
Absolutely. That's a great point. I'm glad you brought it up. We recently moved away from a wait list that would go for years. So a few years ago, the Housing Authority waiting list for Section 8 vouchers would be 5, 6, 7 years. We'd find people waiting for a voucher upwards of 8, 9 years. So we made a concerted effort to empty out the waiting list, contact everybody on it, and switch to a lottery system. And we just successfully implemented a lottery system. So instead of a long waiting list, you're going to have a lottery every year. But let me give you what a lottery sounds fantastic. We had over 5,500 people apply for our lottery within 30 days. And we've just begun pulling small amounts. Our first batch of lottery selections was only 65 people. That's because of our funding. And we're going to continue to pull people from the lottery going forward because we believe it's the most fair system to distribute this important resource. But you can see that the demand far outpaces the supply of housing assistance we can provide.
Yeah. So it's a different – it's perhaps more equitable, but not – it doesn't necessarily reduce a wait time because they could keep not getting pulled.
Let me give you this comparison. Imagine in food stamps – SNAP benefit assistance. People who apply, they get that nutritional assistance, that food assistance. But in housing, you don't apply and automatically get assistance. You have to wait. So it's a completely different sense of scarcity, you know, and that creates a lot of stress. And we see that stress in our community constantly.
Joseph Montoya from Santa Fe County Housing Authority, what is the situation with the wait list there?
It's about the same situation. As in both Bernalillo County and the City Housing Authority, we also have two authorities here. So we have the Santa Fe County Housing Authority and Santa Fe Civic Housing Authority. And Santa Fe Civic Housing Authority has had a closed waiting list now for several years, and they're going in the same direction that Albuquerque is in terms of a lottery.
A closed waiting list, meaning no more applications?
Meaning that you can't apply for a period of time simply because there's too many people on the waiting list as it stands. We have over 1,000 people on our waiting list, both for public housing and vouchers currently. And there, it's a long wait. There's no question, anywhere from 2 to possibly 6 years for people to wait. And if you're homeless or you're having a problem and stress now, which is why people generally apply, the next year wait is extensive. And so one of the issues is supply of just any affordable unit. So right now we have provided, we have 18 units right now, or 18 people that have vouchers. They have the subsidy to be able to look for a house. Many of them are not finding any units at all. And the same percentages of our units is true for Santa Fe Civic also. That they have almost 100 people actually looking for units that they can't find within our jurisdictions. So there's a huge problem. Even if we have the vouchers available, we don't have the physical units available.
Hmm. Listeners, is your city or county doing enough to provide access to affordable housing? Have you ever applied for or received housing assistance? Have you been on a waiting list for any period of time? We want to hear what that experience is like. Give us a call, 277-5866. You can also tweet us a comment with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM or email letstalk@kunm.org. So this spring, the Trump administration proposed legislation that would raise minimum rents for those receiving housing assistance. And the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, crunched the numbers and found that would, on average, affect a household receiving housing assistance in New Mexico by bumping that up $640 per year. And so that if that happened, that would affect nearly 47,000 people in New Mexico. Many of them children. Department of Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson has since backed away from that proposal, but it's still on the table. It's sort of uncertain. What would that look like for extremely low income households in New Mexico? Joseph, do you want to start that off?
Sure. Thank you. As we had mentioned previously, right, there's an extremely class burden population. And as you get lower down the income levels, even paying 30% of your housing, if you're only earning, again, not even $1,000 a month, that really hurts. What is odd, I think, is the kind of political philosophy behind even thinking about the 40% should be a new standard. The question is, in that case, it's like saying that there's a lot of people who have the ability to pay more. The overwhelming majority of our residents are either disabled or elderly, and are not going to be getting any extra income to be able to pay for that discrepancy. Historically, over the last 20 years, there's been a complete decrease, especially in public housing, for funds available for both vouchers and for public housing. We saw a slight increase this last year, but the reality is that there's been a downward trend. So even maintaining units, there's not enough units available for public housing in itself. So it from a funding standpoint, it's quite dire. There is also, under Ben Carson's kind of proposal, work requirements. And again, those work requirements wouldn't assist the overwhelming majority of our residents simply because they're not able to work or are elderly and frail. So it
right,
really
I wanted to, I wanted to ask about that too. I mean, is that it seems to be a thought that, we want to provide local or municipal or county housing authorities with the option to impose work requirements. I mean, is that something that Santa Fe County Housing Authority would be interested in doing?
We already have already in the law, at least for public housing, you need to be able to show that you're if you have the ability to, right? Again, if you're not disabled, if you're not elderly, then you have to participate in supporting the community as a whole. So if you're able to, there's already community service activities that you mandatory have to be able to have in order for you to stay at the housing units. And that often incentivizes people to work if they have the possibility. But let's be clear, so a lot of our population is unskilled and uneducated, and so at best they may or may not find a wage. So even with the minimum wage that they could possibly get, it's going to have a huge difficulty for their working full-time. National Income Housing Coalition estimates that there's 11 million households that currently in the United States that are overburdened, meaning they're paying more than 50% of their income for housing. And these are working people, right? So it would crush, I think, both housing authorities and those who are trying to subsidize rental. It is, I do want to make fact in terms of the other portion of affordable housing, which is be able to purchase a home. Oftentimes, you go over that 30% level to be able to pay a mortgage. The idea there is eventually you're going to have a higher income, and it will lower. And that actually, and then the relative amount of time that you're paying for a mortgage goes down. And statistically speaking, it's true that households who buy a house are less cost burdened than households who are renting.
I want to get back to that idea of home buying being an option. And also we'll talk about what's keeping supply low. We're going to go to a quick break. Keep those calls coming. The number is 277-5866 or tweet a comment with the hashtag Let's Talk NM. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. Back in a minute.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
For some people, summer begins Memorial Day weekend, or when the kids are out of school. But astronomically speaking, summer begins with the solstice. I'm Fred Child. Join me for tranquil music for the longest daylight of the year on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Listen to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio program.
Queer historian Lillian Faderman notes the unknown Harvey. Poland's top court rejects a printer's refusal to make LGBT banners, and Tony winners rally for the resistance. Those stories and more this week.
That's This Way Out, Friday morning at 8:30 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Our focus today, housing affordability in New Mexico. Give us a call, 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866. I have in the studio Andrew Estoshin from the Albuquerque Housing Authority, Deputy Director. Also, Renya Ehrenfoyt from Community and Regional Planning at UNM. And Renya, you're also involved with the Albuquerque Affordable Housing Coalition. Give us a sense of what that work is like.
Well, at the Albuquerque Affordable Housing Coalition, we are a member organization, so a coalition of different organizations that are interested in some dimension of affordable housing. And the organization has been around for over a decade. And the focus is really to participate and engage in advocacy and discussions that impact affordable housing. So certainly part of that was working with the city when we were establishing the Workforce Housing Trust Fund, but also participating in, you know, any process that really raises questions of affordable housing. For example, the city's and county's ABC to Z process that was revising the zoning code and comprehensive plan, you know, really encouraging their the focus on affordable housing, but I would say that our emphasis and priority is on deep affordability. So housing that's affordable for people with in the lowest income range.
You said deep affordability.
Affordability. If we, you know, think that lots, you know, there's people who are, you know, struggling to pay for housing who are often we talk about the area median income. So this is like a cutoff point. Half the people's income is higher, half the people's income is lower than that. And we talk about different, you know, groups of people who might be kind of strapped and be unable to afford housing, like 80% AMI, 60%, 50%. It's when people are in those lower income levels that they are, you know, as we've already talked about, that they're more likely to be cost burdened. And that's right now, like currently, our priority is really thinking about housing for people who are in the lowest income levels. But also, one of our big areas of focus right now and going forward is about discrimination in the housing market. And so perhaps that's something we can also talk about.
Absolutely. I have a Twitter comment. A listener says, some affordable housing in Albuquerque is far away from public transportation, so that makes the situation even harder for low-income people. That's something we mentioned about transportation being factored in. Also, an email comment from Christina. She asks, shouldn't more pressure be placed to get a minimum wage that provides people a better way to support themselves? What about that idea?
Well,
minimum wage. Yeah, Andrew.
Transportation is absolutely key. And I think that one of the biggest taxes we place on low-income New Mexicans is the need to own a car. We see that at the Housing Authority all the time. And that ties into Joseph's comments. If the minimum rent goes up, and so many New Mexicans are away from public transportation and need to own a car, then their ability to maintain transportation is so key to employment, to steady employment. there's going to be extra stress on that, and that's going to have a ripple effect. With regards to the minimum wage, I think any time we can make our economic conditions less of a safety net, more of a trampoline, that's important. And it's important that that we see housing not only as a safety net but as a trampoline, because we at the Housing Authority, we very much want to be see people self-sufficient. But that self-sufficiency journey takes on a lot of different forms and shapes. Not everybody runs on the same timetable. And it's important to give access, our residents and the people who participate in the program, access to different levels of employment and the opportunity to grow in that.
There was a study, I believe by the National Low Income Housing Coalition, where they had a map, right, where it was, these are the states where you can afford a two-bedroom unit on minimum wage, and it's nowhere in the U.S., right? So that's part of this conversation. Rania, yeah.
Well, and their analysis from the National Low Income Housing Coalition, when they analyze what is a housing wage in different states, like in New Mexico, for the average apartment, a housing wage would be almost $13. For a two-bedroom home, it would be close to $16.
Double the minimum wage.
And for a household to rent a one-bedroom apartment, a one-bedroom apartment, they'd have to work, I think the number is 69 hours at minimum wage to do that. So two full-time minimum wage jobs for a one-bedroom apartment.
Absolutely. And we also want to see, it's minimum wage, finding a basic apartment is one thing. Finding an apartment in areas where there's increased opportunity, like good school districts, good schools, an easy walk or an easy commute to your job, those rents are even higher. And so one of the things we need from HUD, the federal government, is the ability to have our voucher holders and our public housing residents move into areas of increased opportunity. It's one thing to just afford it. It's another thing to have all the opportunities in an area that where your children can have a wide variety of educational experiences and you can have easy employment.
That's a good I think that's a good thing to keep in mind as an equity question, right? The geographics. Have you ever experienced homelessness or housing insecurity? Were there resources available to help you find a place to live? Was it a place where you wanted to live, a neighborhood? Give us a call, 277-5866. Let's go to the phones now. Lisa from Albuquerque, you're on the air. What would you like to add?
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. What I think I'd like to add to this conversation, which is obvious, but I think just important for framing the conversation, is what a basic need housing is in people's lives. Like, you know, really folks need that safe, stable place to call home in order to thrive. So there's lots of research and data that shows that kids do much better in school when they have a safe, stable place to call home, that adults and kids do better physically and emotionally when they have a place to call home, even something as basic as managing medication, having a safe place to store medicine, being able to put it in the fridge if it needs to stay cold. Like, just having a place to walk into and call home is so important for folks to maintain their health. And, of course, I think education and career-wise for adults as well. Like, being able to climb the career ladder is really challenging when you don't have a safe, stable place that you go to every night. And I know from my experience doing homeless advocacy for many years that helping folks experiencing homelessness who are usually homeless because they have very low incomes and can't find something they can afford, helping folks just get into housing as a first step automatically, it may not solve, but it starts to reduce a lot of the other issues that they're experiencing. So that is just like a primary need for people. And then once they're in housing, they can begin to work on building or addressing other issues that are going on in their lives. But it's really difficult to do that without a place to live.
Thanks for that, Lisa. I think that's really echoing what Andrew said about housing being a trampoline. We have a Twitter comment. Ivy says she's been homeless on and off since 2013. Now that she has a job, she lives out of a motel because she can't find an affordable apartment. I want to bring into the conversation now another guest. Art Marujo is director of housing at Tierra del Sol Housing Corporation in Las Cruces. Good morning, Art.
Good morning. How's everyone doing today?
Good. Thanks for being with us. Can you just give us a sense, are residents of Doña Ana County facing different challenges than you've heard from Albuquerque and Santa Fe?
No. I think it's across the state. You know, because we're so close to the border, it really is a challenge. I believe that our poverty rate is a little bit higher down here. And down in southern New Mexico, you know, I was hearing the conversation on the rent at 30% in what's called affordable housing. Now, what we do on the housing side, because I mostly deal with the single family housing side, is the 30% that we take into consideration is the gross income of a family household. But we as housing counselors have to realize that we don't live on gross income. Everyone is taxed, Social Security, FICA, 401ks are taken out. So we try to counsel our clients based on their living wages, what they're bringing home. It's what we work towards. And we have been successful in providing single-family housing and with resources available from the state, federal levels. What interests me the most is the waiting list. I think the Las Cruces Housing Authority is experiencing the same thing with the waiting list. There's 1,000-plus clients on their waiting list. And based off the housing affordable plan for the city of Las Cruces alone, there's over 4,000 units needed of affordable housing. Now, if I can just say something here, I am starting to dwell into a little bit of the multifamily development housing, and we here at Tierra del Sol focus on farm worker housing, which is a 514-516 program from USDA for farm workers. But what I find interesting is that everyone's discussing about the affordable housing and we can't afford the rents, but if you look at the development cost of these units, because so much goes into them and there's so much regulation, these units end up being $7, $10 million projects for 40, 50 units. And what you have is you have an affordable unit that's costing you well over $150,000, $160,000 for a rental unit just to develop. So I think if we focus more on how best to leverage our funds and possibly go back to the board and look at that and how we can reduce cost. And, you know, nowadays everyone wants that LEED certification. Everyone wants the aesthetics and laundry rooms. But we got to remember that we have to provide affordable housing to our clients. We have to provide what they need, not want, or what our funders look for. But the bottom line is our clients. That's it. That's the bottom line.
And I do want to get a little more into that of what these units cost or what the range of cost is. I want to go to the phones first. Joan from Albuquerque, welcome to the conversation.
Hi. I was just wondering, it sort of follows with what the gentleman was just talking about, is how do we get more affordable housing? And are there incentives for builders or for contractors to work on projects, either multifamily or I'm just not sure what the best way is to go about that. Thanks.
Art, could you respond to that? What kind of incentives are there for builders and developers?
So really I can't speak for Albuquerque or Santa Fe, but in the single family market here in Southern New Mexico, Doña Ana, Luna, Otero, I can tell you that for private builders, and for nonprofit developers, there really are no incentives. There's no waivers of impact fees, and that's one of the higher costs that goes into housing. I mean, before even the slab is poured, we're spending anywhere from $8,000 to $11,000 just for the impact fees that are required, the building permits, the sewer impact fee. Now we have a public.
That's all just what's required from local and county governments. Is that what you mean by impact fee?
Yes. So, you know, like the sewer has gone up $2,000. Our water meters, we're paying $5,000 per water meter. That's just to get the permit and the water meter installed. Public safety fees, park impact fees. and you question this. You're like, okay, we're paying all this money into these all these impact fees, but where are the parks? They were talking about here in Doñana, and they made the comment about transportation. Yes, it is needed down here as well as the whole state. Case in point, I know this goes off the subject, but I think it is tied a little bit to it, is the economic development. And having job creation here in New Mexico is very important to increase those living wages, but also having the skilled labor. So what we see down here, like in Sunland Park, New Mexico, the governor was here a couple of weeks ago. You know, there was a big old ceremony in regards to a company opening up that does corrugated cardboard. 200 jobs are available at $12 an hour. The thing is, we cannot find the skilled labor to fill those jobs. And there is no housing around the manufacturing plant. They have to rely on transportation, which in southern Doñana County, there is no transportation lines that reach from Las Cruces to Sunland Park.
So really, it sounds like that there's a mismatch between the jobs, the housing, and the transportation. What's preventing the private sector from providing affordable housing? I want to bring back in Joseph Montoya from Santa Fe County Housing Authority. What's preventing developers from building that affordable housing?
Well, there's several factors, right? So building and designing and financing affordable housing is just the same as completely private sector housing or micro-rate housing, except for it's just harder because you're actually targeting low-income people. So the general situation is that, you know, we don't expect to have any new programs or any new monies from the federal government. And so where the action is in many areas is the local government that has the legal ability to provide incentives, such as Art was talking about in terms of impact fees. So under the state impact fee ordinance, right, the only cutoff where you don't have to have impact fees and you don't have to replace those impact fees is for affordable housing. However, it's up to that local municipality to be able to do that. And there is an enormous amount of incentives and possibilities that local governments can do in terms of assisting the private sector for affordable housing. So from a regulatory standpoint, making sure you can get your building permits free or either free or, and have them take less time, because time is money. You have the ability to, if cities so wish to and desire to, they can put in that infrastructure, not at the developer's cost, but at the city's cost. That's a form of subsidy.
That's the that would be going to the impact fees that Art was just talking about.
Well, yes and no. So impact fees are only can only be done. There's very strict guidelines on how you can use impact fees and for what purposes. And it really has to just cover the cost of what that development is going to have to society or that municipality. And so it's up to the developer to provide the differentiation on this cost. A cutout for that is that affordable housing developments, by law, don't necessarily have to pay that if a local municipality wants to enact that law. Right? There's a cutout there.
I see.
You don't have to use impact fee. You can set up a trust fund with many different sources of funding to be able to subsidize affordable housing development. And the action really is that if municipalities are really, really interested in doing so, they have that ability. So a good example is both in Lee County, Hobbs, really putting in enormous amounts of time and energy and funds to be able to attract multifamily developers using the low-income housing tax credits. And they've really provided a good revenue to do that.
And that would be in areas where there's a lot of either short-term or temporary workers or just an influx of like oil and gas workers, right?
Huge influx of oil and gas workers, and they can't find enough affordable housing for them. And then who gets squeezed out, right? It's those people that are working at Walmart and working at restaurants, and there's such a lack of that support those oil workers, right? And the city of Hobbs really recognized that and did something practically about it. The city of Santa Fe has historically also played a good leadership role, as well as the county has, in providing incentives for developers. I do want to add, though, that the only, besides incentives, the only two municipalities or counties that have inclusionary zoning, which mandates affordable housing as part of any ordinance or any development, is in both Santa Fe City and Santa Fe County.
So inclusionary development meaning a percentage of any housing development, a percentage of those units have to go to affordable housing?
That's correct. It's part of your approval process. But it's also,
I'll pause you there. Is your city or county doing enough to provide access to affordable housing? Have you ever applied for or received housing assistance? Are you a landlord managing affordable housing units? What is that like? Give us a call, 277-5866. You can also email us, letstalk@kunm.org. So continuing on this, you know, how to address the supply issue, Andrew from Albuquerque Housing Authority, what else were you thinking of?
Well, one of the issues, housing discrimination is a huge issue everywhere in the country. But there's a specific issue in Albuquerque that I think the new administration, who are great friends of the city, the Housing Authority couldn't be more happy that Mayor Keller is at the helm and has built and is building a team that really focuses on housing as healthcare. But when we think of housing discrimination, we think of the normal protected classes. But one issue that we don't think about is source of income discrimination. And that's basically that a property owner can turn down a voucher holder in Albuquerque solely because they are paying their rent with a voucher. They can say, we don't take Section 8. And I think we've seen a lot of other cities and other areas of the country patch legislation, local legislation, to forbid this type of discrimination. And this is something we very much need in Albuquerque because, as Joseph pointed out, people have those vouchers, but they're not able to use them, or they're only able to use them in a very low – in an area of the city that has very poor opportunities. So that is one way we can definitely increase housing affordability and upward mobility in our city.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Hannah Colton. We're talking about affordable housing today. Keep those calls coming. The number is 277-5866. This is KUNM. We'll be back in a minute.
Summer is a great time to get outdoors, but it also brings safety risks unique to this time of year. From extreme heat to wildfires to hiking injuries, there are a number of seasonal hazards that are worth thinking about ahead of time. On the next Native America Calling, we'll talk about how to enjoy the summer while staying safe.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
It isn't every day we get a new or newer vehicle. Some of us hang on until they've got 200, maybe 300,000 miles on them. Nothing wrong with that. But when it's time to get the next one, how great to send it off to continue to serve. Not just you and your family, but the entire community by funding KUNM. Give us a call and we'll send a tow truck, handle the sale, and then send you a tax receipt and a KUNM membership. Keep doing good. Call 888-KUNM-CAR.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM 89.9. I'm your host, Hannah Colton. We're talking affordable housing in New Mexico. Join the conversation, 1-877-899-5866 or 277-5866. We had been talking a little bit about how supply of affordable housing. Renia Ehrenfoit from Albuquerque Affordable Housing Coalition, also UNM. Can you talk a bit about the pros and cons of, like, manufactured housing?
Well, to say, you know, one sort of more general comment about this is one thing that I think that we all understand, but sometimes we don't state often enough, is the thinking about the earlier caller Lisa's comment about the importance of housing stability is keeping people in housing is critical. And so that means, you know, that's the question of people being displaced when, when rents go up. There's certainly no question that people in lower income households are evicted at higher rates. And also people often leave suddenly before getting evicted. So when we see eviction rates, they're actually lower than people having to move and endure all the costs of that. And the instability that comes with that. And one area that I have looked at is manufactured housing communities. So oftentimes we still say mobile home parks. And these nationally are one of the, if not the only, kind of form of home ownership that is deeply affordable. That people living in manufactured housing communities often have very low incomes, but they do own their house. They have a little bit of an unusual situation that often they lease the land that the house is on, but own the house. But this can be a very important way that people can gain some equity and some of the benefits of home ownership. But it also is a form of housing that is, if we want to say, stigmatized, like public housing is, that we have a lot of stereotypes about this kind, you know, these types of housing and people who live there that aren't true, but still impact whether, you know, whether we sort of invest in or care about keeping them. And I think that for manufactured housing communities, you know, over 3 million people across the country live in these communities. We actually, in New Mexico, have some of the highest rates of manufactured housing. And manufactured housing communities, and we certainly have a number around Albuquerque, but throughout the state as well. And so really ensuring that these areas, you know, that we work to retain them, you know, so that they don't, because sometimes they become appealing. You know, you look, you say, oh, large tract of land, that'd be perfect for, you know, a multifamily housing complex, you know, and some of these, like right now, they're in the central city area. When they were developed, they're often in the outlying areas, but the land gets increasingly valuable, and that leads to a process where the person who owns the land may start thinking about selling to a developer. And I think that the question of really trying to retain affordability is equally as important when we think about supply as creating new housing, you know, and so making sure people don't get displaced from the housing that they have.
Thank you for that. We have an email comment from Tom. He says there are way too many evictions in Albuquerque, even in middle-class neighborhoods. Give us a call if you want to add to the show today, 277-5866. Perhaps you're a builder or a landlord or someone who's dealt with housing instability. Andrew from Albuquerque Housing Authority.
That's a great comment about eviction, a bit of eviction. And at the Housing Authority, one of the things we did is we read through Matthew Desmond's Pulitzer Prize winning book, Evicted, which is, if you really want an insight into the stress and the culture of how the struggle to afford housing, that is a wonderful book to read. I would like to point out that in Albuquerque, if you are sued in housing court for eviction, you are not entitled to representation. So you do not get a public defender. You have to come, you know, unless you can afford an attorney, you have to go and sometimes represent yourself or take it or hope you have the opportunity to get legal assistance from legal aid, which is often limited. And it would be great to see a legal culture in which people who are at risk of losing their housing are entitled to legal representation in courts of law.
Let's go to the phone. Bob in Albuquerque had a question, I believe. Bob, you're on air.
Yeah, thank you, Hannah. Here's my question for the panel. And that is, there's what I perceive as an untapped supply of housing in the city and the counties, and that's homes and multifamily properties that are delinquent on their taxes and in possession of the municipality. Could we take those and then, even in big picture, employ the people that go into them to train them to be tradesmen and rehab those properties and turn them into affordable housing? And one aspect that I would see is that provides for infill, because now those people are living amongst multi-income areas. So your thoughts, and is that something could be pursued?
Thanks for that. Andrew, what's the situation in Albuquerque with delinquent properties?
Well, I'm not very familiar with the delinquent property situation. I would say that if part of that conversation means going back to people who are in that extremely low income bracket, and programs take funding and they take staffing and funding on the, and training takes funding. And that is a very noble cause that we heard our listener just describe on our phone, on the phone. But it's going to take time and resources to maintain those properties, to get them in a condition in which they'll be staffed and have those supportive services that are necessary to give people that jump off the trampoline into the workforce. So it does often come down to funding. And I think what's great now in Albuquerque is we're moving to an administration that is more focused on those housing first needs and is building a team to meet those needs with other service providers in the city. So I'm a lot more optimistic that our current mayor and his team will be reaching deep into their toolbox for a lot of creative tools And I'm hoping that people like us at the Housing Authority will be in a position to help them going forward.
And Art Barujo from Tierra del Sol Housing Corporation in Las Cruces, do you have a response to Bob's question there?
Yes, yes. So that is interesting he brought that up. So a couple of months ago, we had a tax sale here at the courthouse. And we tried to enter the game.
A tax sale?
We built a...
Sorry, a tax sale meaning, what does that mean?
Yeah, so there was some delinquent properties, and there were single-family properties. There was no multifamily. There were single-family properties where the owner had gone delinquent past 3 years. So they sent them up to the state. Nothing was done. They put them on the tax sales, what they call down here. And Tierra del Sol, we built a fund because we wanted to enter that game because we saw the need for affordable housing, and we thought, okay, well, let's try this. Unfortunately, what happens, it's a bidding process, and you're up against private investors. And sometimes these properties, just because the tax sale says, oh, it's $5,000 in back owed property taxes, doesn't mean that house is going to cost $5,000. I mean, we've seen these bids go up, you know, four or five, six times more than that. And so we talk to our county assessor and say, hey, what can we do as a nonprofit, or what can you do as a nonprofit to help us? Because what you're seeing is you're seeing these private investors come in, and they are, you know, they're taking all these properties and they're just flipping them. Well, we can actually, you take the property, like Bob had mentioned, put it back into the community at affordable rent. But we are getting beaten. And Andrew said, it's right, it's funding. If we had more funding available for this, I think it would work. We'd be able to bid with those. I do want to make a point on the manufactured housing. So we have looked into it as discussions with Fannie Mae. Fannie Mae has reached out to us because we are a major housing provider for rural New Mexico. We deal a lot of projects with RD, rural development, under their Section 502 program. And we do the Section 523, which is mutual self-help, where we have a group of 8 to 9 families working on each other's homes. Now, the manufactured housing, we've been asked to enter Hidalgo County, Luna County. We've been asked to go to Hobbs by the leadership in Hobbs, like Joseph was mentioning. And we looked into the manufactured housing. We thought the quickest way to do this would be manufactured housing. So Fannie Mae has a duty to serve to provide special financing for manufactured housing. Because at one time, the rates were a lot higher. But now they have a program where a manufactured house, you're going to get the same interest rate as going to a site-built house, which is really good. So we're in the pre-planning stages, looking with partnering with manufactured housing dealerships here in New Mexico on how best we can serve our clients and provide us a small little footprint or house plan that we can provide to our clients. So
that sounds promising. On the phone, we have Rachel from Santa Fe. Rachel, what did you want to add? Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Thank you. I just had a question, or I guess a comment, that when it comes to the manufactured housing you guys are discussing, which is, my father actually runs a business up in Colorado where they're creating these developments that are like trailer parks, you know, like you were talking about how people are renting the land, they own their home, but they sell tiny homes instead of trailers. And it seems like it's been a really great opportunity for people, low-income people, to own a home. And it has less of a stigma than, like, say, a double-wide trailer. So I just thought, you know, maybe this is an interesting option for New Mexico, and perhaps it's something that the private sector could be doing. That's my comment. That's my question. Tiny homes.
Thanks for that, Rachel. I'll put that to Joseph Montoya, Executive Director for the Santa Fe County Housing Authority. Are you seeing any movement towards tiny homes or tiny home villages in Santa Fe County?
No, not really. And there's a couple reasons for that. First of all, as Art had mentioned, you do have to get some form of financing to be able to have somebody purchase a tiny home. And the So there's two aspects. They're tiny, but their square footage costs are exorbitant. I mean, 3 to 4 times what they would be just for a mobile home that's even bigger, right? And so, and there's no clear definition of what a tiny home is in terms of manufacturing issues, in terms of code issues. And so anytime that you're attempting to finance something for somebody else, generally speaking, you need to have a secondary market. And Art was mentioning this when he was talking about the secondary market, somebody to actually buy the loan once that loan is created. Somebody generally buys that loan and puts it in their portfolio. And doesn't. And what you need then is somebody to be able to do that. And there's no financial mechanism for that. In addition, laying out the issues for as a subdivision regulation to put tiny homes is also a little problematic, because the only thing close to that is subdivision regulations for mobile home parks, as was earlier discussed. And so if you're doubling that, there's subdivision regulations that have a difficult time in doing so. So there's some financial hurdles to be able to get there. And again, I think there's benefits to not only the land underneath. There's the common land grant issue in terms of where people communally own the land. Tribal areas also where people own the land. And land trusts, right? So there's organizations that by which they buy the land, they own the land, and they operate the land. But the units on top of them are actually owned by the folks who are living there. And that's generally a mechanism to keep it affordable, because as was mentioned earlier, you can build affordable housings, but if you don't keep it affordable, whether it be multifamily or single family, you've invested an enormous amount of time and money, and at the end of 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, what it is, you lose that investment. And in high market rate areas such as Santa Fe, you're not going to be providing that continued affordability.
All right. I'm going to pause you there, Joseph. Thank you. And I know in Albuquerque, there is actually a movement towards a tiny home village. I know the city's been looking into different properties for that. Last question, because we've got about half a minute left. You know, most people would probably say, yes, we need more affordable housing. When it comes down to it, very few people actually want that development in their own neighborhood, right? It's the not in my backyard phenomenon, very common. How do you go about bridging that gap and building that local political will? I want to hear from both Rania and Andrew just briefly. Andrew?
It's all tied to communication, to bringing people in and dispelling some of the stigma that comes with housing assistance and that comes with public housing. We're taking a big turn at the Housing Authority using the Rental Assistance Demonstration Project to rehab our 953 units of public housing, to make them fit into communities, to make it housing that increases the value of a neighborhood, both in social capital and financial capital.
And Rania, any ideas how to build that local political will?
Well, I think one thing that it is important to think about is that if we look at research on this, overwhelmingly, different forms of assisted housing are really good neighbors. Low-income housing tax credit project, group homes, and so on. And so that people fear them, but when they come in, they actually seem to increase property values, and that become benefits to the neighborhood. And so I think we should keep talking about that.
That's all the time we have for today. Thanks to everyone who called in. Thank you to all four of our guests. The conversation doesn't have to end here. Use the hashtag #LetsTalkNM on Twitter or comment on our Facebook page. Next Thursday, festival season in New Mexico, we'll talk with experts about the fun and economics of these events. If you missed any part of the show today, you can listen on our website, KUNM.org, or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. I'm Hannah Colton. Thanks to the D Numbers in Santa Fe for our theme music. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Mallory Begay screened your calls today. Celia Rainey live tweeted. May Ortega produced today's show. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM.